Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Wow.
Hello and welcome back to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way to learn about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined by Japanophile and Gibbon lover Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
Japanophile and Gibbon lover, how bad does that sound, Chris? Come on now.
These titles get better every week.
I've just been berating Chris off air because I spotted him drinking a can of coffee. Now,
what's wrong with drinking a can of coffee?
I'll tell you why. It's 8:30 at night in Japan.
But I'll tell you why.
You're gonna be up all night, mate. You're not gonna sleep forever.
I do have to edit a lot tonight, so
right,
yeah,
okay.
This is how I survive. This is what I do. And I'm also, yeah, it's a good way to kick things off. By the way, if you don't get the Gibbon joke thing, the Gibbon comment, do go back and listen to last week's podcast.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've just got a kind of obscure introduction there that doesn't make any sense. So do go back and listen if you haven't already. I'm a bit repulsed at the moment, Pete. Not by you. Don't worry.
I
read a really weird story today. I was just, when I'm not doing anything, I just sort of sit on the chair, look at the wall, and occasionally read things. And I read the story of a man called Sogen Kato. A few years ago, Tokyo officials went to go and meet this guy called Sogen Kato on his 111th birthday to congratulate him for being the oldest living man in Tokyo. And when they got there, they opened the door and found his mummified remains on the bed where they'd been since 1978.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
He's been there since the 1970s. The reason they know he'd been there since the 1970s was there was a newspaper like on his lap from from that day. What happened is his relatives hadn't announced he'd died and they'd been taking his payments, his pension payments, to the tune of $100,000 or £70,000. They'd just been taking them. And he'd died, his family didn't say anything, and they'd taken all the money. And then the Tokyo government found out that there were 230,000 people over the age of 100 who were still alive but unaccounted for. And it kind of led this domino effect of everyone realising lots of people were dead in Tokyo but not knowing if they were or not. So, kind of a weird situation.
What I would say is that if you're going to try and defraud the government to the tune of a ridiculous amount of money, well, it was 9.5 million yen, around about 72 grand, in widower's pension payments, don't put a newspaper from the 1970s in his lap. I get the feeling that these people aren't details people.
Apparently they hadn't even gone in there. They just left him. And they didn't even know he was dead. Like, when they interviewed them, they were like, oh, we just thought he might be dead, we weren't sure. But yeah, I think he'd locked the door from the inside, and they were like, oh, we can't bother to go in there.
Yeah,
and
like a Japanese
it's probably
hotel.
A good thing they didn't go in there, given the situation of Sogen, Mr. Kato. So that's what I read today, and that's why I'm a little bit repulsed.
It's probably the
nice
probably
little introduction
coffee.
There to the podcast.
Yeah, a dead person. Yeah, thank you for that, Chris. I mean, welcome to we're nearly in April, and yeah, you're giving us that absolute filth.
This week, a few weeks ago, we had a question, and somebody asked me what I would change about Japan. Mm. And it's one of those questions where I was put on the spot. And I couldn't get an answer out. I was lost for words. I just didn't know what to say. So I thought this week, to make up for it, I would base the entire podcast around it. Mm. Things that we would change about Japan.
Right. Okay. I mean, so I've been piling through all of the tweets that you guys have been getting. Because you did put this out on Twitter as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I did a post on Twitter saying, what would you change about Japan? I think we got over 100 responses in the last hour. So clearly there's a few things people want to change. I mean, Japan, I've never done a video about this on my YouTube channel because I've always kind of shied away from saying anything negative about Japan because you suddenly open up this. Everyone starts being like, oh, why are you in Japan then? It's like,
Look,
you can have criticisms about a country. But I don't like the attitude where it should be like, oh, why are you there then? Everyone says that. So only on the podcast do I feel comfortable discussing it. I don't know why. I don't know why that is. But I love Japan, obviously. No one does tries harder to, you know, showcase Japan to the world. So this is the one time that I'm going to lay into it a little bit. Well, exactly. Even then, my criticisms aren't that bad. So.
But it's very much, I think, most of the criticisms that I'm looking at are on Twitter, mainly administrative, to be honest, and the fact that it's so far away from Europe and people from Europe want to go to Japan. It's not Japan's
That's
fault.
That's not criticism.
No, it really
Can't
isn't.
Can't move the tectonic plates. Yeah, I mean...
Do you want a few from Twitter and then we'll take yours, Chris?
Yes, you're in charge of Twitter today.
I'm in charge
dive
of
in.
Twitter.
What can you find?
Me and my news Pete's gibbons.
Big job. A special job for a special boy.
Yeah! Responsibility that I don't deserve. Hannah Tolson. Hello, Hannah. Hacker Patol on Twitter. The really stressful working culture in some companies and a lack of holiday time. Now, that's something we've talked about on this podcast before. You've talked about Japan. It's slightly lacking in its productivity figures compared to other developed nations, but they have the longest working hours.
They do, and that's actually the first one on my list. Attitude towards working culture and overtime. I've got a list of six, by the way. I don't know if I already pointed that out. I chose six. Six is my go-to number for these things.
Yeah, Ten's you love
too
six,
much.
Don't you?
Five is an even number. So we need a... Hang on, wait. Five is an even number? What am
Five
I on
is
about?
An even number.
What's going on, Pete?
Too much
I
pizza.
Forgot maths.
Too much coffee.
Attitude towards work is just ridiculous. You're a good employee in Japan if you're just present at work. Often, when I was in my job as a teacher, I finished at work at about 4:30. But if I was there till, say, 5:30 or 6, all the staff would come over and sort of congratulate me for being the best worker in the world. And there's this idea in Japan that by doing overtime, just by being at work, by being present, you're doing your job, even if you're just sitting there, like, I don't know, reading a book or not doing anything related to your job. The idea that you're present at work is a really big thing. Mm. I think it's the idea that you can be called upon at any time. If something happens, you're there, right?
Right.
So, which is silly. I mean, it lowers productivity massively. And you get the situation where a lot of workers are too afraid to go home because if they're looking for a promotion, they want to look good to their supervisors and whatnot. So they stay in work doing nothing, just sat at their desk. And they'll get promoted for doing that. So I think that's ridiculous. There isn't much of a good dividing line between work and private life. So people get overworked, and it's to the detriment of companies in Japan, I think. They lose creativity and motivation, the staff. So, yeah, that's a pretty big flaw, I think. And that's probably top of my list of things to change about Japan. Attitude towards work hours and overtime.
There's another one here from Monty as well. I mean, we'll start with the meaty ones, and then we'll go on to the slightly more frivolous ones, like the King of Keck. We talked about Keck last week. The King of Keck on Twitter. The worst thing about Japan, the part where they blur out the fun bits. We don't need to go into that, but that's what he said. Monty,
that's disgraceful.
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 What a disgrace, King of Keck. He is the King of Keck, though, so who are we to judge? He is literal royalty. Hello to
what
Monty.
What else would you expect?
Hello to Monty. The justice system It really pressures people into admitting crimes they didn't necessarily commit. Now, I chatted to a guy called Adam Terrell. He lives in Tokyo. I met him a couple of days ago. He works for a company that distributes films. He's a film producer himself, Third Window Films. He does some beautiful films. I think I recommended one of them, a comedy film called Fuku-chan of Fuku-fuku Flats, which is a really fun comedy show, comedy film rather. And I didn't think Japanese comedy would be anything other than like slapstick, because you know, like Mr. Bean's really big out there and stuff. I always think that Japanese comedy is all about
it's
that.
It's very slapsticky, definitely.
But this film was actually, it was like Grand Budapest Hotel. I'll have to send you the DVD. It's so good, Chris.
That is good.
Fuku-chan of Fuku-fuku Flats or something. He was basically telling us that he got arrested like a few weeks ago, and he found himself in the legal system, and he got arrested simply because basically he's got two kids in his house. I think he's got kids anyway, or there's certainly kids in his complex. He was with his wife, and there was a drunk man outside, a drunk Japanese man outside, and you know, just shouting. And so this guy Adam comes out of his house and basically tells this guy, Keep it down. Stop shouting. You know, he's a drunk guy, but you stop shouting. There's kids in the house.
There's kids. They might not be mine, but there's kids up here. Be quiet.
There's kids up in this building. And this guy basically pushes Adam, and Adam, you know, just kind of calms him down a bit. And then this guy says, right, you need to give me money or I'm going to tell the police you punch me or push me or whatever. And this and he's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going back in my house. Anyway, so this guy phones the police. The police come and basically say, look, we know you haven't done anything, but we need to arrest you because this guy isn't backing down and he needs you arrested. So he has to go through this system for 4 or 5 days where you get put somewhere.
Well, he was put in a cell for four or five days.
I think he was put in a cell, or he's certainly in the legal system for 4 days just because a drunk Japanese man over a white guy's, say-so, basically. And this guy's, you know, speaks perfect Japanese. He's been there for like the last 10 years. He's got businesses out there and stuff like that.
Because of this kind of country.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think it was more just, well, he's got a Japanese wife now. He lives in Tokyo now. But just because of the process, there's no kind of fluidity. There's no kind. It's a very rigid system.
You're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, it's so weird.
So that was
a fascinating story. But so it sounds like the justice system, you know, pressures people into admitting crimes they didn't commit and stuff like that. So
yeah, I have heard that they press you into basically admitting that you've done something and signing something. And yeah, it's not something I particularly want to find out.
No.
We've already talked about getting done for speeding tickets and getting done for having medicine, as you did in Roppongi. But like, yeah, I mean, that's terrifying. That's very strange.
Michael Latham, lower taxi prices, please. I spent a lot of time in Japan. I will continue to return, but it is very expensive. Uber does happen in Tokyo, certainly.
Uber does happen. No, it doesn't in Tokyo. Only the Uber Black, the like premium one, where you pay like a bucket load of money.
I
don't think the actual Uber exists. The kind of standard one exists because Japan's taxi organisation is incredibly powerful. Japan seems to have a lot more taxis than any other country I've been to. It's good, there's always taxis there, right?
Yes,
and
always
the taxi drivers are wonderful, they're lovely, they're quite smart, they know what they're doing, they know where places are that you want to go, but it is pricey. And as someone who, when I was back in the UK recently, I used Uber several times for the first time, and it was really good. The taxi drivers were very nice. It was in their interest to be nice because you could rate them afterwards, right? And it was it was notably cheaper than the standard taxes. So, it would be quite good to have it here, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I don't think it's going to happen at all.
It's interesting because there are so many taxis. Actually, I was playing a video game, one of the Yakuza video games, and there's an entire section where you have to work as a taxi driver. So I feel like I've lived the life of a Japanese taxi driver with my doilies and my lovely car where the doors open automatically. That's a good one, actually. The doors open automatically frequently in the taxis, and also they have doilies everywhere. So that's quite nice.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I'll give you my second thing on my hit list of things I would like to change. Ban squat toilets. I don't know why they're still there. Like, you go into a toilet and you have, like, four cubicles, and three of them are, like, super advanced laser toilets from the future. Like, I walked into my... I was in a hotel in Tokyo the other day, and I opened the key, and I kind of turned the key, opened the door to the hotel room, and I heard... And I was like, what the fuck is that? And I walked in and opened the bathroom door, and the toilet was just cleaning itself. This little mechanical rod thing had come out with, like, this little rod had come out from the toilet and started washing itself and spraying water at itself. And then I sort of stared at it for a few seconds. It sat there silent with this rod out washing, and then it just went, and the rod went back in, and the toilet went silent. And it was like, the toilet had a mind of its own. What is this?
It's
so,
like,
you've got these super-duper futuristic toilets, and then you've just got a hole on the floor, and I don't understand what it is, why it's there, or how to use it, and I hate it. I absolutely hate it. There's nothing worse than walking into a building where they've only got those squat toilets, and that it's not, there's nothing worse than that. All my worst memories in Asia revolve around ruddy squat toilets.
Squat toilets.
Get rid of them. They should be gone.
The strange thing about squat toilets is that it's kind of like, you do your business. I don't need to see that again. But the squat toilets dictate that you see it again. I don't need to see that again. It's like the Germans do that quite a lot. The Germans always have a little shelf so you can have a good old inspect. It's like, it's unnecessary. Just get rid of it. I don't want to see it. That was pizza 3 hours ago. It's fine, all right? I'm just dealing with it.
It doesn't seem very hygienic. It seems, you know, it seems the opposite end of the spectrum to the usual Japanese toilets that have shower machines built into them, all sorts. So, yeah, but fundamentally, using them is a nightmare, and I hate them. And they, yeah, get rid
it
of
is,
them.
It
That's
is,
one,
though.
One of the things I think we should get rid of.
It is, though, a lot healthier way to do your business, though, apparently. Having your legs up as high as your buttock.
Let's not go there.
But apparently you can buy stools to put your feet on, and that apparently that's a more natural way to do it. So there we go. Can we have another one from you, Chris?
Yes. I think another thing Japan should change is not eating or drinking in outdoor areas. Or what you find in Japan is restaurants and bars and things don't have an outdoor seating area. It's quite a common thing in Europe. You know, you go down the street and people want to... It's a really nice thing on a hot summer's day. You sit outside with your wine and your pizza. I mean, that's basically what I do. You can't do that in Japan, though, because for some reason, the whole idea of eating and drinking outside doesn't really exist. It's incredibly rare to find somewhere that has tables and chairs outside. I think that needs to be changed. I think that's kind of... sad. I think it's a bit depressing. You find most restaurants and bars are often hidden behind closed doors in Japan, and that's something I would change. It just feels wrong on a summer's day. You know, you want to have a drink, you have to go inside in the dimly lit room. You know, you can't be out. Pub gardens, I miss them so much. Sitting in a pub garden, eating and drinking on a summer's day.
A lot of like eating experiences. Occasionally you'll get like seasonal ones, and I've been to one in Osaka, and it's more of an eating experience where you just have some delicious food and maybe a drink with it. But yeah, you're right, and also it is quite daunting to walk. You know, to go up in a lift to the third floor, to go to a bar, to walk in, and especially if you're not Japanese, and there's just Japanese people, and everyone turns around, and you're like, you know, you just say tabemono or something. I just want food, or I just want a drink, and it's actually quite tabemono. Disconcerting for someone who's actually quite who's a little bit shy.
Well, you get these buildings with like five floors, with you know, 10, 15 restaurants in, and they're all really well concealed.
Yeah.
Certainly, the first few years that I was in Japan, I was always really intimidated to just go into one.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what it looked like, I didn't really know what it did. You know, you go in the elevator to, like, the fifth floor to the restaurant, and the doors open, and you're just in the restaurant, and the staff are there looking at you, so you kind of have to go in then, or it's just a bit awkward if you decide not to go in. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But fundamentally, it's just the idea of sitting outside and eating and drinking, and I miss that. And that's one of the things I would change. Eat and drink outside.
Frost says the flight prices, LMAO. He's kecking all over the place. From my perspective, I guess it's different possibly from Japan, which has a slightly stronger currency, let's face it. Getting a flight from London is... very, very expensive most of the time, certainly direct.
You're looking at like £700, £800 return. A friend of mine came to Japan via Italy on Air Italia, I think a few years ago, and they came for £230 return. And I was like, are you what?
Yeah.
And they were like, and they said to me, like, they had to stop off in Rome for a few hours, you know, on those sort of stopover flights.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh no, what am I going to do? I have to stop in Rome for 12 hours. Yeah. Perfect.
Beautiful.
I think it was
Rome.
A special one off. Generally, £700-800 return is what you're looking at.
Yeah.
And it isn't a nice flight. But then again, that isn't something we can really change. I don't know, exactly.
It's very much where it is, isn't it, really? I mean, from my perspective, Virgin used to fly out there, but they've stopped. Now
they
basically BA, and also, is it ANA? That's one of their...
ANA, Japan Airlines, and BNA are the main three that go direct.
Yeah, certainly from London anyway, but obviously you guys are from all over the place. But certainly from Europe, Air China's a pretty good option, changing Beijing. You can get flights for around about £300. I mean, it's a terrible airline, but it's safe. Got an excellent safety record.
A friend of mine flew, I think, China Eastern once, and the plane, for some reason, it didn't go to Tokyo. In the end, the plane just didn't turn up, and they were left at an airport halfway to Japan, stuck in China somewhere.
Oh, God.
The airplane company was just like, nope, we can't bother to do anything about it. Good luck with that. And kind of left them, so... Yes, be careful what airlines you fly with.
But there are deals to be had, but they're mainly not direct ones, because the direct market is mainly for people who need to get there for business and things like that. But if you're happy to take a couple of hours in Beijing or
I find the three airlines that do fly direct from London to Japan, BA, ANA, Japan Airlines, over half the plane is like business class seats.
Yeah.
Because the people that did the route are usually business people.
Mm.
And I have to walk through like 100 people who are all sitting there drinking their champagne, looking really smug. And I'm like, you bastards. I have to sort of walk through looking depressed, going through this wonderful, lovely seats to my little box at the back in the economy section. Sucks. It's not fair. It should be illegal to have to walk through business class and first class sections.
We should be allowed to. We should be allowed to board where the peasants board, I think it's fair to say. But I would say that, Chris, you on the last flight back did get an upgrade, and you did have a little stool to put your foot on. So,
I got on the plane and I got to the airport, and they were like, "Oh, your seat's gone." I was like, "What? What do you mean, my seat's gone?" And they're like, "Yeah, it's not there anymore." I was like, "Oh, okay." And then they were like, don't worry, we'll see what happens. They gave me the ticket to the plane without a seat number. And
what?
I got to the boarding gate. I was the last passenger on. They were like, you've been upgraded to premium economy. And I was like, yeah.
I got a little
and it was
stole.
Actually a lot better. So that was a bit of luck. I don't think it was... It wasn't because I was some sort of YouTuber. It was just because they'd forgotten me. So upgraded for all the wrong reasons. But
oh,
I was
well.
Happy with it.
Never mind. Alex wants to see the end of the fax machine. An out-of-date technology. They need to modernise. There was a scene in the film Back to the Future 2 when I think Biff is... or someone's being fired by a Japanese man from Japan, and basically the fax machine... something bursts out the fax machine, basically his P-45. Yeah. And I remember sort of seeing that going, oh, people don't use fax machines. Japan very much still uses the fax machine, even in 2018.
Yes, it is obscene. Like... I remember that's the biggest misconception about Japan, which is a whole other topic. But top of my list is like this Japan being technologically advanced. And it has good internet. And I think it's the only thing that I can really... It's got good internet and bullet trains. But in most cases, like office work and offices are actually... They feel like they're stuck in the past.
Mm.
Everything's very paper-based.
Yes.
They don't... Because these companies are often run by quite elderly guys who... don't know a lot about new technology. They're kind of resistant, resilient to change. So fax machines stay because they know how to use them. They're still there. I was shocked by the presence of fax machines in the school where I worked. I was like, what is this contraption? Is it a telephone? And they're like, no, this is a fax machine. I was like, oh, wow. Well, I've never seen one before until I came to Japan.
Mm.
Like, they were before my time in the UK. We kind of got rid of them in the early 90s, I think. I'm really confused by it.
Mm.
But,
I mean, the infrastructure is there, but people kind of hang on to technology they're familiar with. For example, you see a lot of people with flip phones still.
Yes, flip-flown.
Shabu-shabu.
The cheapest way to travel between Japan and the UK is flip-flown. they're everywhere. I actually quite like flip phones. They look cool. I haven't got one, but there's something quite cool and nostalgic about them.
Yeah,
but they use them here just because they're simple and people are intimidated by smartphones. And I thought about getting one just because sometimes I spend too much time on my smartphone. I thought about just getting a cheeky flip phone. And yeah, but they're everywhere still, actually. Yeah, most people over 50 seem to use a flip phone exclusively.
So fascinating.
That's another odd thing. Yes. So I'll give you another one from my list of six things I'd like to change. Superficial compliments.
Right.
Have you had that on your trips here? When you've said some Japanese and they've gone,
Peter-san,
Nihongo dou desu. And you're like, no, I don't know anything.
Especially because they know you don't speak any Japanese, because they'll say it in English. They'll say, oh, your Japanese is very good, or you can hold your chopsticks really well. And as soon as anyone compliments you on your ohashi work, is it ohashi? Yeah, chopsticks, isn't it?
Yeah,
ohashi, the honorific version of hashi. Whenever anybody compliments you on it, you instantly go to absolute pot and you start dropping things.
Yeah, it's always a bit awkward. I mean, I get annoyed when they kind of say, well done on the chopsticks. I've got to the point now where I just say, well, yes, I've not only lived in Japan for 5 years, but like, we use them in the rest of the world a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we use them going to restaurants and whatnot. But yeah, no, it's just this idea. The three big ones are, Nihongo dozu, your Japanese is good.
Right.
When your Japanese isn't good, it feels quite kind of patronising. I mean, it can feel quite nice at first. I mean, the first time it happened to me, I didn't know that in Japan, people and strangers throw off compliments every minute that you speak to them. But I thought that people were just being nice. And I even thought that I was good at Japanese, even though I knew like five phrases. I was like, wow, maybe my Japanese is good.
Maybe it's
really
easy.
I couldn't even say a sentence like, I really like trees. Well, I couldn't even say that. And they'd be like, oh, you're Japanese. It's amazing. Then there's the chopsticks one. And the third one that I get the most is, I think I said it the other week, ikemen.
Ikemen.
Or ikemen or kakui, which is the word for cool. Kakui. Kakui ne. Peter-san, kakui ne.
Peter-san.
Cool. Just because I'm a foreign dude, I'm a rarity, I'm cool, I'm a genius, you know. So, I don't really like it. For a time, when I first arrived, I was like, oh, this is going to my head. Maybe I am brilliant. And then it happens all the time, and it still happens to me now. People call me a genius. People tell me I'm cool. People congratulate me for the use of chopsticks. And it's just a bit annoying, and it's very superficial. I know people in Japan are just trying to be polite. In the same way that we make small talk like, hey, Bimpy, what have you been up to? In Japan, the equivalent is just making superficial compliments, I find a lot of the time. And that's one thing I would change.
Kiniku. Somebody said I had muscle. Muscle. Someone was quite impressed by my muscles once. And I know that's not true. I'm an absolute weakling.
That's an odd one.
That is an odd one, isn't it?
How would they change that about Japan?
How would I change...
Don't use the word muscle.
Stop saying muscle.
It's an odd
Stop
one,
saying
isn't it?
Muscle,
Don't say the word muscle.
Man.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
Another one of my points that kind of ties into the superficial compliment thing is overly attentive shop staff.
Right.
Now, that's not superficial, actually. But what you find is in quite a few restaurants, I'd say 40% of the time, I find the shop staff can kind of hover over you or stand near you and stare at you. Now, the good thing about Japanese restaurants is when you want someone to help you, you just shout out, sumasen, you know, sumasen, oh, help me, come over. Which is good, because I hate it in Western restaurants where you have the staff constantly coming over, right, and being like, how's your meal, guys? How's your meal?
Yeah.
It's like, it's great, but now I can't enjoy it because I've got a mouthful of food and I have to stop everything and tell you how my meal is.
They always do that.
It's bloody annoying. And once you've lived in Japan, it really gets to you when you go back home. It's like, don't ask me how my meal is, just go away. But what you find in Japan is a lot of the time staff just stand there. Like, I went to a gyutan restaurant, cow tongue. It's the cuisine of Sendai. Did you try it when you were here?
No, I don't think so.
Cow tongue. But I went to a gyutan restaurant in Sendai Station, and I sat there and I had my order, my gyutan, and I looked up and it was like a horror film. The chef was staring at me with a smile. There's three staff at different points around the restaurant staring at me. And if I looked at any of them, they'd sort of look as though they wanted me, as though like they thought I wanted something. So they'd start to walk over towards me. I'd quickly look down. I'd look down at the plate again and be like, nope, don't need your help. And then they'd back off. And I just couldn't enjoy my meal, because every time I looked up, they started advancing on me or just staring at me. So that was really kind of odd. kind of awkward. So that's another thing I would change.
Yeah, but fair dues.
I don't know how big of an issue that is. I think maybe that's just me being a bit it's just me nitpicking.
Just eating out, though, isn't it? Especially because I think we kind of equate attentiveness with people wanting tips or people earning their tips. But in Japan, obviously, tips, you just don't do it.
Woohoo. Absolutely. And generally, the service quality in Japan is formidably good.
Yeah.
It's legendary, you know. It's so good. It's the best in the world.
People are genuinely proud of their work and proud of their jobs and proud of the way that
they are, yeah, people. Yeah. That's one of the best things about Japan.
Komo Code on Twitter. I would like Japan to change the name of Pocari Sweat.
Why? It's one of the best things about it. Everyone loves that. Pocari Sweat.
I mean, it's an isotonic drink that, to be honest, if you've got a hangover, it's not a bad drink. It replaces those electrolytes, which I'm informed are relatively important, and it's a lovely salty/sugary drink, and it's bloody magnificent.
It is quite good. I got an addiction to it in like my second or third year in Japan. Like, you could buy powder, so it basically just tastes like... what does it taste like? What's a foreign equivalent?
We don't really have it. I mean, we've got like kind of
Lucozade Sport.
It's way too. Yeah, I think Gatorade is probably a closer approximation. It's not quite that sugary. It's a little bit more salty. It's nice. It's an interesting drink.
Yeah, it's a lot saltier. But I got addicted to it for a time, and I would like get the powder and just like lick it off the table. That sounds really grim, actually.
Chris, that is a low point.
That does sound really grim.
That is licking Pocari Sweat powder
Pocari
off a
sweat
table.
Powder. Poor man's Scarface.
Yeah, just piles and piles of this isotonic powder. Fantastic stuff. Liam, friend of the show, Edwards. Hidden fees in every aspect of business. Having to pay a fee for random things like key money and stuff like this.
Yeah.
I listened to an entire podcast of a bloke over in Japan, basically talking about his life in Japan, and he did a whole show on key money. Now, fine, that's cool. It was very informative, and I still listened to the whole thing. But yeah, key money is just kind of, it's like a bribe, isn't it?
The two words send an absolute shudder down my spine. Like, when I got this, the current apartment I'm in, I had to pay a shocking amount. I think it was like five. Like key money, for those of you who don't know, when you get an apartment in Japan, you have to make a key money kind of payment. I think the money goes to the owner, the landlord, as like a thank you money, or it goes to the management company. Either way, it costs an absurd amount. So say you pay like $500 rent a month. The key money can be like six times that. I think I paid, I can't remember how I paid. I think I paid like $4,000 of key money.
That's insane.
And it just nearly bankrupted me. I had to like get out a special loan just to pay the bloody key money off, because I didn't have that kind of money on me at the time when I got this apartment. So it can be the downfall of many people coming to Japan. I was lucky. When I was a teacher, I didn't have any key money and my rent was absurdly cheap. I only paid like 10,000 yen a month because it was government subsidised. It was basically the closest thing to being free you could get for accommodation in Japan. Whereas now I pay more like $700, $800, I think, because it's in Sendai, in the city. So it's very pricey, and that key money was awful. So watch out for that. That can be awful if you're getting an apartment in Japan. It can really ruin the whole experience. I finished teaching, and then I went back to the UK for a month or two, and then I came back to Japan and moved to Sendai.
Yeah.
And I stayed in temporary kind of apartment. What was it called? It was kind of like, not share housing. It was kind of like contract, a special kind of contract where I didn't have to pay any key money, but I had to pay a stupid amount of rent. It was like over $1,000 of rent every month.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to find a massive deposit, but I was still like going bankrupt every month from paying rent. So it comes with a few caveats usually.
Yeah.
Usually a few things in there that make it a bit bad.
Well, we hope we haven't put you off Japan with our saying everything sucks out there, but I think mainly in this show we've been talking about things that, you know, not seismic changes, just slight changes to the way things are done would improve things exponentially. And it's quite interesting more than anything else, I think it's fair to say.
Well, my last point, the last thing I would change is the attitude towards giving opinions in Japan.
Right.
At work, for example, you're never supposed to really speak your opinion. You have a meeting with your staff, your colleagues, and you sit around the table, and the person running the meeting will usually say what they think, and then you'll kind of sit there and no one will talk. And you have to kind of reach this mutual consensus. But you can't ever go, no, I don't think that's a good idea, because then you'll be kind of outcast. And I have a good Western friend who worked in a Japanese company who gave some sort of advice on strategy to really help the company. And they just ignored him because he was very blunt about it. They were like, no, that's not the traditional way of doing it. He kind of got outcast for being opinionated.
Yeah.
There's this idea here that you kind of don't give your opinions. You're very indirect about the way you do things. And that can be good and bad. I mean, I've never seen a fight in 5 years of living here. And that's probably because of the way people, you know, aren't blunt and say, oh, your hair's shit. Well, you wouldn't say that. People don't give their opinions. But the absence of debating feels like it casts a pretty big shadow. Like when I was teaching, we had this kind of, they were introducing students to debating, because this isn't a concept that is in Japan, this idea that you argue and debate over a situation and find a resolution. It's done very differently. So that's a good and bad thing, but I'd like to change that.
More debating, please. Shall we end with our quick Japanese lesson for this week? Obviously, it's the highlight of my
speedy
week.
Speedy Japanese lesson.
Yes. Some phrases that you might want to use, some words.
Yes, this week I thought we'd use some words and phrases from each of the 6 points that I've just gone over. I'll give you one key word from each of those points that you might need to know. So the first point was, squat toilets. So what's the word for toilet?
Toilet.
In Japanese.
I think we've discussed before, whenever I go somewhere new, I just learn where is the toilet. Odeo, I think, is in Korean.
What about bathroom?
Bathroom.
I actually don't say toilet much in Japanese. I say the word for bathroom. Because I don't like to be like, I want to go to the toilet. I want to say, like, I want to go to the restroom, the bathroom.
Right, okay, yeah. Because bath is yok something or other, isn't it? Yok, I can't remember.
I'm
not
anything.
Good. Credits, help me.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, please.
Do you give up? Do you surrender? The word for bathroom is oterai.
Oterai. I see.
Oterai. So, like, if you want to go to the toilet, you just say, oterai wa dochira desu ka? Where's the bathroom, basically?
Ah,
Yeah, it's better than going, Toire wa doko desu ka? Where's the toilet? Oterai wa dochira desu ka? Which way's the bathroom?
Which way's the bathroom?
Second point, we talked about attitude towards work. So what's the Japanese word for work? Do you know that one?
The Japanese word for work is shigoto.
Good. Nice one.
Thanks,
you know
Chris. I think I was trying to figure out what my job was in Japanese, which is radio no DJ. DJ of the radio.
Yeah. Good. So, yeah. Good. Well done.
Yeah.
What about outside? The next point was about drinking and eating outside. So what's right. the word outside in Japanese?
I don't know this one at all, to be honest, Chris.
It's soto.
Oh.
Soto.
So say...
soto niru. Like, she's outside.
So you could actually sort of think shigoto is work, and if you want to work outside, just get rid of the I and the G. Soto.
Yeah. Soto. Shoto.
Shoto.
Next one we did was, I think it was hospitality.
Right,
attentive
okay.
shop staff.
Ah.
What is the word for hospitality in Japanese? You actually hear it everywhere in Japan at the moment, especially in the run-up to the Olympics. They're like, oh, we've got such great hospitality, but what is the word?
Not a clue.
Didn't hear it. You might have heard it when you were over here. The word is omotenashi. Omotenashi.
Omotenashi.
Omotenashi.
Ah. No, omotenashi. I didn't hear that at all, to be honest.
Yeah. You'll hear that a lot. Like, it seems to be the most, one of the top most used words I hear on TV and posters and things. Hospitality.
Right.
Omotenashi.
Ah.
What about, what's the next point? Oh, yeah. Superficial compliments. What's the word? I said it. What is the word for cool?
Kakoi. Kakoi.
Good. Kakoi.
Kakoi.
Kakoi there.
Kakoi.
Yeah, good. Kakoi. And finally, last point was on giving opinions. What is the phrase? You probably know it. It's quite a common... You hear it all the time in Japan. I see. So when you say to some... Like, say I give an opinion. Say I think, oh, the new Black Panther movie was good.
Yeah.
And you think it's rubbish, but you don't want to go, oh, it's rubbish. You just want to go, oh, yeah.
So it's like a kind of phrase that
you would say.
Sort of like, oh, uh-huh, yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah, yeah, good. Yeah. Like a non-committal kind of phrase.
Mm. And this phrase is quite useful in any conversation, really. It's so good to kind of keep things going, I guess.
You know the phrase, don't you?
I do.
You know
so,
it.
So desu ne.
So desu ne.
So desu ne.
So desu ne. It's like the most used phrase in any... conversation ever in Japan. Saw this there. Often if someone's just talking and I'm not listening, I'll just go, oh yeah, I saw this there. It's kind of just going, uh-huh, mm-hmm, yeah.
That's happening. Well, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so saw this there. Good.
Lovely old job.
You've done well this week. You've nailed the list.
It's almost a clean sweep. Wacky news of the week, Chris.
Wacky news of the week. The wacky news of the week is... Board of Education in Fukuoka suspended a Japanese teacher who had stockpiled 750 pairs of underwear in his office.
Oh, no.
Which is
he'd
quite
been stealing,
a lot of underwear.
He'd been stealing pants.
Well, there's some debate over that. Basically, they found... this is such a weird story. This teacher, 50-year-old teacher... another teacher discovered a stockpile of some 750 pairs of women's underwear stored in 10 plastic shopping bags
plastic
in a cabinet used in his office. That's probably one of the top five worst situations to be in if you're a teacher in any country. The teacher then insisted that he'd purchased the underwear from a specialised seller in July 2016 for the sum of $100. And he then moved them to the school a month later with the intent of reselling them during the school's high school cultural festival in October, when the students buy and sell items at the on-campus bazaar. But that doesn't seem like a credible excuse, does it?
I mean, the story goes, like, he sounds like a panty thief, but it turns out he was actually a panty merchant. Now...
turns out he was just a fucking idiot. Seriously. Ridiculous,
like,
man.
It doesn't say whether these were pre-packaged. He just says that they were pants, and he's going to try and sell them. Now, I'm not buying second-hand pants.
He bought 750 pairs for $100. They must have been used. or the incredibly cheap underwear. There's room for debate there, but I suspect they were probably used. And this man is clearly off his rockers. But what a dickhead, honestly. I read that and I just felt angry. He got suspended for 3 months.
3 months? Only just suspended?
Seems pretty light, but he actually resigned. He was like, no, I better go. And quite rightly so.
I'll go to the next town with me pants. Did he get to keep the pants? That's all I need to know. That's all I want.
I think he did.
Nice. Fair dues. It's his property.
Just to sit in a room with his underwear. Yeah.
Let's a disgusting story to almost end the podcast. Quick email from Van. Chris, any new English anecdotes? Basically when Japanese is used rather strangely. Is there any particular ones you've seen lately?
Yeah, I walked past a steak restaurant the other day,
right.
Just selling some meat and some steak, and there was a billboard at the front that said, "This is the extremity of luxury. To bite into chunky meat. How juicy and tasty. It's beyond the description." And that, it's not like inherently mental, but it just sounds a bit weird and off. I love the phrase, the extremity of luxury.
Extremity of luxury. I'm literally at the extremity of luxury, guys.
To bite into chunky meat. That is, I don't think it is beyond the description. I think they nailed
it.
The extremity of luxury, for me anyway. It is biting into chunky meat. So.
As an English speaker sort of going into restaurants that have these kind of rather strange, you know, fundamentally interesting, but fundamentally also very strange things. For me, I just sort of go, it would take one English person or one English-speaking person to just rewrite that menu and everything would be fine.
That's a business. People come to Japan want to be teachers, but if you want to make some real money, set up a business proofreading these ridiculous signs.
Yeah.
Then you think, yeah. But I guess a lot of the time it is the English is actually aimed at Japanese customers.
Right, okay.
You'll find these places actually want to simplify their English because it's going to be read by Japanese customers. And
it's
they
frequently
don't really
not
care
simple,
what's
though,
on the English, right?
It's frequently not simple, though, is it? It's actually quite flowery and actually quite poetic in a weird kind of way.
Yeah. The extremity of luxury.
Yeah.
And the last question is from Jason, who says, what is the best and cheapest way to get to Japan from the UK? I'd really like to visit, but I only ever find tours, and I don't want to be rushed on a trip there and miss awesome sights. I'm assuming, Jason, you are coming to Japan on a tour, but I would recommend not doing that. Just grab a guidebook or watch the videos on Abroad Japan. Plug the channel, definitely. But just do it yourself. Don't worry about going on a tour. I mean, that's the easy way of racking up a massive bill, going on a tour. And I never liked tours anyway because they kind of ruin that kind of spontaneous sense of adventure that you get from travelling around places. So, just don't go on a tour if you can and do some research. Spend some time making your own itinerary. And I think that's a lot better and certainly a lot cheaper. And also fly via Italy. As we previously discussed. See our previous answer.
Exactly.
But don't go on a tour.
Get a cheap flight, don't go direct, and don't go tour, for crying out loud. Because they always take you around like shops and stuff that you don't want to be in. I remember being in Korea, and I did the tour of the demilitarised zone between North Korea and South Korea. Rather voyeuristically kind of peer into North Korea and with a big binocular and or a set of binoculars rather after that they took me to an amethyst museum and basically press ganged everyone into buying amethyst. I had no appetite for amethyst. It's a precious stone, isn't it the stuff they find in like in rocks. I'm sure the geologists
amethyst.
Yeah, and they took us around the amethyst thing and basically forced us to buy amethyst stuff, and none of us did. And then we were with a lot of Americans, and we got on the minibus, and I cracked a real funny, Chris. I went, "Oh, I forgot to pick up some amethyst." Like no one was in the market for amethyst. I forgot to pick up the amethyst, Chris.
You ridiculous man. Yes. Oh,
never mind. So
there you go.
Once again, thank you for listening.
Once again, time's up. But thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. And if you have any things you'd like to send us, abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Very original email address. Send in stuff there. Your comments, your thoughts, your questions, send them there, and we might read them out next week. But for now, guys, as always, we're off. And I'm going to not be able to sleep because of this canned coffee. What a fool. I am.
Stop drinking coffee, Chris, you maniac.
Long live amethyst.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.